Couldn't keep from thinking about this term and then thinking about might be a ripple in the cemetery and somewhere in Missouri if C. Edmund Marshall were to see this term. I think these ideas kind of go back to guys like that. This is a sort of a time-related beginning, since the first materials I'll talk about are quickly formed, very hydrite, forms quickly, and particles are granular and they form in water. So there's an environmental aspect here, and they also form in soils. And they recently in science, the revisions of the structure of ferrihydrite. So it's evolving. The properties of ferrihydrite, known to most of you, granular at the nanometer scale, X-ray diffraction peaks, whether it's 2 or 6, depending on how well crystallized it is, tremendous surface area for fixation of phosphate, closely associated with lepidocrosite. And a typical examples in southeast Texas, with the drying out of the rice paddies in the early spring, these minerals form in a matter of weeks and with a considerable intensity of color. And am I doing that or is somebody else? I might touch the wrong thing. So we were taking some surface soil there to look at, and here is some of the material. And in the upper left-hand corner of the field, you can see the darker red colors of the ferrihydrite, and then adjacent to it, there's some more orange colors that is more of the lepidocrosite. And on drying, of course, you see the evidence of smectite and the color changes associated. So these are more transient iron oxides, so their time dependency is rather short. And lepidocrosite is the lath shape particles in this image, and the granular material, of course, is ferrihydrite. And the overall image tells us that probably this was precipitated in the cellular structure of microorganisms, and thereby I think this is a stimulating slide that we would like to gather together our forces with the biologist and learn more about what's going on here. And back to the structural aspects, even though these lepidocrosite crystals form in short intervals of time, they do have distinct structure. On the left, you see the 0.67 nanometer spacing, and then about a half a dozen layers structure evident by the lattice fringes. And you notice that the particle is ruptured in the middle. Well, this is being a quick form mineral, one of its characteristics is that there are imperfections even within a small particle. Now, the properties of these two minerals, lepidocrosite and ferrihydrite, they form and dissolve in short term, and colors intensify in a matter of 2 weeks in the spring. So they're indicators of property changes going on at the nanometer scale. Prominent coatings of PED surfaces, tillages, surfaces, and pores. And of course, this is true in rice paddies. It's also true in ponded waters and such conditions where you have seasonal movement of the water table. Bright colors of iron oxides are dark red and sort of an orange red in common terms. And of course, the chemistry of the rice land soils and the phosphate testing procedures are partly controlled by these oxides and their seasonal variability. Now to turn to the more permanent crystals that actually grow in soils, particularly in the more mature soils, goethites. This is a complex particle that in the upper right you see the electron diffraction pattern, which indicates a multiple number of single crystals. In the cartoon to the left, you can see that we have four arms, or blunted arms, I would say, of goethite in this particular particle. And then to look a little more closely, where the lattice fringes are very evident, and you see at the top of the image these pointed crystal faces. That's the growth surfaces of the goethite. And then, of course, you notice that the lattice fringes are somewhat towards horizontal, and they're also somewhat towards vertical. So there's a complex array here within a goethite particle. So this is a product of slow growing and probably dissolution and recrystallization type thing. And another example, which is from a vertisol, and the spacing is very evident in the upper left of 0.27 nanometers, and the index is given there. So these are comfortable minerals in the soil environment where they grow and with time. Goethite occurs also in vertisols in some very contrasting surfaces, very irregular surfaces, and these surely influence the physical behavior of vertisols, even though they may not be so common. So they're good environmental indicators, and there's some soil physics going on here that we'd like to better understand. Now we turn from the red ones and the orange ones to the black ones, totorokite being a prominent member of the manganese oxides, formed in vertisols in Central America. This is the only case where we found a well-formed totorokite particles. They also form on siderite boulders. This is where we first found totorokite, These are uncovered during the surface mining of lignite in East Texas, and we saw these dark gray and black surfaces of material forming, and then identified them first by morphology and then later by their tunnel structures and their twins. And this has a nanometer scale twin that's very diagnostic with a transmission electron microscope. So we've got a group here of manganese oxides. Bernasite, the one at the upper left, is actually produced in the laboratory by inoculating this solution with some soil microorganisms and precipitating the bernasite. And the reason we had to resort to this rather than giving you a soil example is that the particle quality of bernasite in soils, at least that we encountered, was so poor that we didn't have any good images to show you. But it's complex when synthesized in this way, and probably much more complex in soils. And then in the upper right, you see the fibrousness of the totorokite. And then in the lower left, you see that the images in soil clays are not always so pretty, and that one's not, but yet if you look at the overall, you can see the evidence of particles in different orientations, and that's part of the twinning that is characteristic of totorokite, but it's very poorly shown. And now, just to make the picture somewhat more complete, this is not a nanoparticle at all. It looks somewhat like kaolinite, as it was once identified, but it's actually lithiophorite, which forms in ultrasols and in oxasols. This is a Hawaiian oxasol example, and these just illustrate that once aluminum comes into the picture in crystal growth in soils, it tends to create a rather stable product and growing much beyond the nanometer scale. So there's only about 1/50th as much manganese in soils as there is iron. So therefore, we had to resort to various other approaches to characterizing the manganese oxide. So this is a nodule. It's probably about the size of your pencil eraser originally as a section. And you can see in the upper left-hand corner here the dark band of iron. And then adjacent to it, below the arrow there, you see the scantness of manganese. So this is a layering, a concentric growing of the nodule from the beginning to a fairly sizable layered product, rather poorly layered, of course. So there's some soil age information here if we could just decipher it. Now, turning back to the best example of soil formed totorokite, this is the soil formed in Central America near the Guatemalan border that one of my colleagues brought me. And you can see the twinning very evident in the left-hand image. And that's a characteristic feature. At 1 nanometer fringes is very easy to see with a transmission electron microscope. Now we turn from the manganese oxides to the silicates. Palygorskite is the image we have here. Ari Singer is in our audience today. These came from one of our book chapters that he authored. And it shows the fibrousness of the crystals around calcite in the upper right part of the field. And then from an Australian example. Now these are not the best images in the sense that shows the nano feature. This shows what you could see with lower or medium magnification. But of course these crystals occur as nano-sized particles, and we just happen to have SEM and these types of images at the time this was developed. But these are truly colloidal, well used and well recognized in soils as well as in drilling fluids. Petrified log formed about 2 meters below the surface of, at least occurring about 2 meters below the surface in College Station, Texas. And it has this very bright, white, powdery coating. And when we look at it in section, you can see the nanoparticles in this dusty top around the outside of this log, and petrified as it is. And that's where the nanoparticles are. And normally, in the houses you see made out of petrified wood and other common examples of it, these nanoparticles would have been long dispersed. But this being buried, we had quite a lot of them. So the left image here shows you the nanoparticles of opal CT. And they're tabular, as the structure would imply, of cristobalite to tritomite and the opal. This is a common occurrence in soils in Texas, although it is minor. There's also some interesting quartz there. So the properties of colloidal opal CT, a bright white color, readily dispersed, seldom seen on weathered wood, weathered petrified wood, and identified by X-ray diffraction commonly as a minor phase in Texas soils. Now we'd go to the volcanic soils to illustrate these two minerals, allophane and imogolite. Of course, in terms of crystallinity, it's sort of like turning back to ferrihydrite. These are very rudimentary developments of crystals. And you see the circular and spherical particles of allophane and in the upper right and the upper center of the image. And then throughout the image you see the fibrous imogolite. And of course there is a structure hypothesized for this, and so there is detailed information on it. And these are very high surface area, very reactive. Came to my attention in years gone by because of their high variable charge and high fixation of phosphate. So allophane and imogolite properties, they are often occur together in volcanic soils, and I said andesols. They also occur in certain podzolic types of soils, so they're not entirely restricted to volcanic soils. They produce very broad X-ray diffraction peaks, and they form in a gel that has a distinctive sort of brownish or reddish yellow color, and the yields of water when you squeeze them between your hands, which is where we start out looking at soils anyway, and you feel that buttery feel. That's unique as far as I'm concerned, and someone dubbed these cottage cheese soils. Well, that's the best metaphorical expression that I've encountered. I think that came from a colleague. Okay, now let's talk about smectites, which were introduced to you in the previous presentation, and I use here just to point out the flexibility of this particular smectite. At the top of the image there, at the top of the screen, there is a set of fringes at about 1.2 nanometers and of spacing. And of course, when the foliar structure of the smectite poles, it puts the crystal, parts of the crystal, in a good position to image. And therefore, those are lattice fringes there, although they're very poorly shown. They were more visible in the original image. And they're, that folding characteristic is also evident here on the lower right, and even more so if you look along the bottom. Now, that is to say that some smectites, such as this one, which is somewhat of a model smectite, they're very thin, at nanometer scale, as pointed out by a previous picture speaker. And I think from our current work that this is an important property. And that work that I'll illustrate here, because it's very much on my mind from day to day, and these are Langmuir adsorption isotherms. You notice the amount of aflatoxin sorbed, an organic molecule, in moles per kilogram on the vertical axis, is quite low for this particular smectite, only about 0.06 of a mole per kilogram. And then at the maximum, it's up about 0.6. So there's about a tenfold range in the poorest and the best of the smectites that we've studied for these samples from Mexico, Mississippi, and Texas. And I think that, at least to me, this was a surprise. There's as much difference among smectites as there is, and we're trying to better understand that. And just as, again, in sort of cartoon-like images, that's the aflatoxin molecule, and you're all familiar with this structure. And that's a broadside view of the molecule, but when you place it in the same orientation, it enters between the layers of smectite, and that's illustrated in simplistic form here, and we didn't show the water and the exchange ions, but this represents the aflatoxin molecule, and it prevents the closure when we heat the specimen in order to remove the interlayer water around exchange ions. Just as a side, whenever I was in the process of putting this together, this appeared in my mailbox. This is a gold colloid, and it seems it's timely because the next paper I see is dealing with gold colloids. And it's stabilized by this sulfur containing organic. And I just mentioned that for your reference, since that's in about the current issue of science. So high surface area, rapid chemical reaction, dispersibility, often exhibiting colloidal behavior, adsorbed abundant water and organics, resemble small organic particles of starch and casein, and as in milk and starch and plant material. These are the characteristics of these nanoparticles that are important to us in soil science, and thanks to these folks for their help. And that concludes my presentation.
All right, we have time for questions for Dr. Dixon.
How do you explain the bending of iron and manganese in some nodules? Is it a variation in time? What is the time scale first? And is it a variation in the composition of water or the EF of water and related to which time scale? Linear or decade or seasonal variation?
Would you repeat the question?
Okay. The bending.
Now we're talking about which group of minerals?
Manganese oxide.
Yeah.
Okay.
The bending of the nodules you show, there is a bending of iron and manganese.
Iron and manganese.
How does it work?
So the question is, what is any ideas as an explanation for the bending of iron and manganese oxides, and what kinds of time scales this type of phenomenon would be occurring over? And is it related to chemical properties or other things?
Okay. I'll answer it in two ways. First off, there is a time scale related to the phase of manganese oxides. The bernicite occurs in rather youthful soils, such as where there is quite a lot of calcium on the exchange, and I'd say neutral to alkaline, perhaps. And it's a quick former and a disorderly former. And I think we have poor data sets on bernicite, to be honest about it. There's a lot to be learned about it, I think. Now, moving to somewhat more mature situation, we have the formation of lepidophorite, that's in oxisols and altisols, lithiophore, excuse me. Now, in the case of the nodules, which I think is what you're really, and I might say, where does bernicite really come from in nature? Well, it's outside the population of soils. It's more in hydrothermal deposits. So if you really want to illustrate bernicite in a natural system, I think going to the hydrothermal deposits is the best source, and perhaps somewhere in soils. And therefore, we're sort of inheriting, soil scientists are inheriting bernicite, or it's very poorly formed. Now, in the case of the nodules, which is, of course, a way to localize the various iron and manganese nodules, the particulate is very small. So we're not... We're not talking so much about bending, I think, although I think bending is obviously possible from our synthetic bernicite, but we're talking about particle-to-particle changes. We're looking at a very big nodule, as big as, as big as the end of your pencil, and so we're just looking at, and that's an SEM image that I showed. It's the aggregation of small particles in that case. So I don't see the flexibility or necessity to explain that concentric shape. Maybe I got to give the wrong image of that. That's kind of a sketchy answer.
Another question. I'd like to ask Joe, if you could elaborate a little bit on or speculate on what you think is happening with regard to the aflatoxin, the differences in absorption in the different smectites.
We have a general image of that, and we're trying to get more specific information. But in general, the smectites that contain more magnesium and iron in the octahedral positions are the better ones. They're the better sorts. And the poorest ones are the ones that are primarily aluminum in the octahedral positions. And now, having said that, TEM is a good tool to stimulate one's mind, although it doesn't prove things as much as we would like. But in the TEM images, the folding types that I showed this morning are inclined to be the more effective at sorbing between the interlayers, as long as they're orderly. Now, in reference to our previous speaker, laponite. And those, in our experience, the laponite ones, the laponite and analogous poorly ordered smectites seem to be poor intercalators of this organic molecule, aflatoxin. And on the other hand, the aluminous ones, when we look at them under TEM, they tend to be thicker particles, and they don't seem to have the flexibility. So your question about flexibility is a very pertinent question. And reverting back to that question again, I'll point out that the synthetic bernicite that we had was very flexible. Obviously, it was a very complex group that we obtained. So I think that bernicite is not well bonded together. It's a little bit analogous, if you take such a crude analogy, with laponite. I think we're still learning about laponite, speaking for ourselves, and I hear other people, when I talk to them about it, they say it's a crystal in the process of developing. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe.